And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And we're excited about the show today, packed full with information and celebration. We have some fantastic guests lined up for you today as we are discussing green in unusual places.
Yeah, and we're not just talking about your lawn either, right?
We are. Oh. It's all about lawn care today. No, it's not. It's not. You'll find out what it's all about. And Mark, what's happening? The creeks are warm. The cherries are finally sweet. The white nectarines are drippy. Veggies are abundant. Farmers markets are open everywhere. This is good.
And you're asking me?
And what's going on in your life?
Well, the creeks are actually, the creeks I've been in are actually cool and refreshing. I actually was able to get my butt into a couple of creeks during the hot spell.
Too much information. But yes.
Oh, so nice. So refreshing and relaxing just to be sitting in the water and unbelievable. But why I can do that is because summer's here and the time is right for picking out your fruit. Yep. And right now, today, I want to talk about, I'm going to hold off on that. I have a question. We're going to talk about what's in season, right, today?
Yes.
And we're going to talk about a vegetable that is produced in every continent of the world, with the exception of Antarctica.
Well, I kind of know.
Yeah, you kind of know, so I'm not asking you the question. But for our listeners, just think about that for a few minutes about what vegetable do you think is grown everywhere except for one continent? Everywhere on the planet. So pretty amazing.
Coming up soon with What's in Season with Mark Mulcahy. Exciting.
Yeah.
But
before we go there, I think we need to look at the green headlines. And we're going to do that with Gina Rustani right now.
Thank you, Mark. First, it's news here at home. Nearly 1 in 10 fish collected in the Pacific Ocean contain plastic debris. Researchers at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography are finding troubling evidence about the amount of plastic entering the food chain. The study estimates that fish in the northern Pacific ingest 12,000 to 24,000 tons of plastic each year. And in world news, there's a solar power boom in India. Across the country, thousands of homes are receiving their first light through small companies and aid programs that are bypassing the central electricity grid to deliver solar panels to the rural poor. 40% of India's rural households are lacking electricity, and nearly a third of its 30 million agricultural water pumps run on subsidized diesel. With the size of that market, decentralized solar installations could potentially be larger than the grid-connected segment. In the UK, demand for low-carbon products are growing, despite the recession. The Carbon Trust, a UK-based nonprofit, reveals that 45% of shoppers would be prepared to stop buying their favorite brands if they refuse to measure their product's carbon footprint. Brand loyalty is also at stake, with 56% of people saying that they would be more loyal to a brand if they could see at a glance that it was taking steps to reduce its carbon footprint. And good news from the friendly skies. Two European airlines will soon be flying with recycled cooking oil. KLM Royal Dutch Airlines and Thomson Airways will be using biokerosene to power some of their aircrafts. KLM recently made history as the first airline in the world to operate a commercial flight powered by biokerosene, flying from Amsterdam to Paris with 171 passengers on board. The airline will begin using the biokerosene on more than 200 flights en route between Amsterdam and Paris beginning in September. I'm Gina Rustani, and that was this week's Green Headlines. Helga?
Thank you, Gina. Awesome. Wow. Mark, I know we talked about, importing food, and we said, well, it's a cultural exchange. It's important for so many reasons, and yet what's not working is the way we are doing it. And wouldn't it be great if we had biodiesel ships, which already are existing, and now we have biodiesel or cooking vegetable oil-based planes? That's incredible.
Well, the possibilities are endless, right?
Obviously, yeah. Fantastic. I didn't even know that technically would work. We will look into that more. That's really a topic I'm very excited about.
Yeah, the news today, Gina, what great news. I mean, the India solar power, you know, 40%, right, of the rural population of India having electricity for the first time because of the sun that's been there since the country began, right?
Really exciting stuff.
That's exciting stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Gina. And that brings us right into today's topic. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we will take a quick break, but stay tuned for our first interview with Fenway Ballpark. Yep, Boston baseball baby. All that. Why is that an organic topic? Well, you'll find out and you will be blown away. Green in unusual places today on An Organic Conversation. That and more when we come back right after the break. Stay tuned.
Ain't so pretty. His parents give him love and affection to keep him strong, moving in the right direction, living just enough for the city. His father works some days for 14 hours, and you can bet he barely makes a dollar. His mother goes to scrub the floors for many, and you best believe she hardly gets a penny. Living just enough, just enough for the city.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today we are talking about green in unusual places. That was, of course, Stevie Wonder with In the City, and we are talking about unusual places of sustainability and organic food. We got some note that there's a Washington, D.C. cafeteria, a vending machine now offering organic food options, has been installed in the Longworth House office building as a request of congressional staff working long hours and wanting healthier food options.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Washington, D.C., congressional staff.
And if you go to Milwaukee, if you go from Washington, D.C. to Milwaukee, you'll find the Kohl's department store. You hear the ads about Kohl's all around the city. They're using organic gardens at their corporate headquarters to provide vegetables for the local food bank.
And then that is topped or rivaled by the National Park Service, which now offers land stewardship training by Job Corps, lauded by the U.S. Forest Service, making the Forest Service facility and operation sustainable, lowering its operational costs, doing so, reducing the carbon footprint, and restoring terrestrial and aquatic ecosystems.
And guess what? Your country is in this too, Helga.
Yay! My country.
And it's not just about the Women's World
Cup.
Which
one, actually?
It's not just about the Women's World Cup. It's Germany is going to abandon all nuclear power by 2022. I mean, that's what, 12 years away, 11 years away?
And it's not, you know, a country of 800,000 people. It's 85 million people.
85 million people.
It's a real country.
And they figure that they'll be able to reduce their greenhouse emissions by 40% by when they do that.
Yes, Germany abandoning nuclear power by 2022. So it led us to ask, where can we find green initiatives, organic food, sustainability measures in unusual places? And we didn't need to go far because Mark, as we all know on this planet, is a baseball fan who, when speaking about organic agriculture around the country and beyond, tries to go to a game in every city he's visiting. Is that correct?
Either major league or minor league or college, yeah.
Or whatever league.
Yeah, whatever league I can find, that's
and
right.
And so we stumbled upon the Red Sox ballpark. And with us on the phone now is Kathleen Harrington, the Red Sox ballpark development coordinator, calling in from Boston, Massachusetts. She has been with the Red Sox since 2004, and now she's in charge of all the amazing initiatives that are going on at Fenway Ballpark. Kathleen, welcome to An Organic Conversation.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's fantastic that you're joining us today. And the Red Sox were the first team in Major League Baseball to install solar panels at their ballpark. But that's just really one small part of all your efforts in regard to sustainability. Tell us more about what Fenway is doing.
Actually, our first, I guess, real green initiative that we had put in place was about 10 years ago when the decision was made to keep Fenway Park instead of knocking it down and building a new facility. So by doing that, we tried to reuse whatever we could over the construction process that lasted 10 years. We were able to reuse about 6,000 bricks that were, you know, some of the original ones from when the park was built in 1912. Some of them were from the park's first major renovation that was done in 1934.
And that's just not just green, but that's also sweet, right? To carry on that tradition of, you know, 100 years of baseball.
Yeah, we're very much looking forward to celebrating our 100th anniversary next year. There's all sorts of preliminary planning going on now. In addition to saving Fenway Park, though, we've also done things like we were the first Major League Baseball team to create a green team, which is a group of volunteers. They're mostly college-age students who come every game. They actively comb the seating bowl with bags, collecting any plastic cups and bottles that fans kind of acquire, I guess, over the course of the game to be recycled. We've also installed recycling kiosks this past off season. How those work is you insert either a plastic bottle or an aluminum can, and you can acquire points. You can use those points to redeem things like gift certificates, all sorts of different prizes, I guess you'd call them. We've also began a composting program this season where we are composting all the food waste in the kitchens and concession stands in some of our premium club areas as well.
We're talking with Kathleen Harrington, the Red Sox ballpark development coordinator, calling in from Fenway Ballpark, Boston, Massachusetts, which is the oldest baseball park in the country. Is that correct?
It is, yep.
And using the old bricks in the 10-year remodel that Fenway has undergone and all the amazing sustainability efforts, including being the first baseball park in the country to use solar and now having a big initiative around garbage and waste.
And isn't there something about your cups, too? Aren't you using all recyclable materials for your cups and paperware and things like that?
Yes, yeah. Aramark, who is our concessionaire and facilities partner, they will purchase. They're responsible for buying all of our plastic cups, and they do purchase recycled products whenever possible.
And on the green team, you said the green team is volunteers who come in and they collect all of this recyclable material that eventually gets recycled. And how does someone actually get on that green team? If someone was interested in seeing the ball game, of course, while they're doing their job.
Yeah, that's one of the perks of it. They get to actually watch the game while they're working. It's fantastic.
Can you put Mark on the list right now? That's what he's making weird suggestions here in the mic. I think that's what he's trying to say, pointing to himself.
You can actually send an email to greenteam@redsox.com, and we would be happy to set you up to volunteer at one of our home games.
So then, that's awesome. Thank you, Kathleen. And the grass care, the management of the lawn, which is, you know, besides the people in the stadium, the guests, the visitors, is really at the heart of the game, of course, defining kind of the quality of the play. You have an entire initiative around mowing and the grass clippings. What do you do with that?
The grounds crew, they use all biodiesel fuel in all of their lawn mowers. They also recycle the grass clippings from the field, and they use organic fertilizers and biostimulants on the grass whenever possible.
That's fantastic. So what was your motivation to bring those initiatives into actual programs? Like, is it driven by an economic idea? Was it requested by fans? What made Fenway become so green conscious?
Combination of several things. First and foremost, we want to do the right thing, and we want to reduce our carbon footprint whenever possible. We also, saving the ballpark was a huge thing. There was a group, local group called Save Fenway Park, and they kind of put their heart and soul into making sure that Fenway Park would be around for generations fans to come. So I guess that was an extension of those efforts. Financially, yeah, I guess it does make sense for us too financially to be more green. For example, we used to water down the seating bowl after every game. We've cut back on doing that now, and we only hose down the seating bowl after every 3 games. So when we're not hosing down the seating bowl, we have people who go through and pick up all the trash and recyclables to dispose of them properly. But by doing that, we're not only cutting down on our water usage, we're also cutting down on our water bills as well.
Wow.
We do save money as well.
Wow. And so do you save money for some of your other efforts, or is it actually more expensive to run a green ballpark?
I think there's probably an upfront cost for a lot of those things, such as solar panels and whatnot, but I think we probably do make up for it in the long run.
And what do the solar panels actually run at the ballpark? I mean, what part, if people were looking around and they're saying, okay, because an extreme amount of lighting goes on at a baseball park, especially at night, and you have all your concession stands, can you give us an idea of, you know, what sort of power you get from your solar panels, or does it run a particular thing at the park?
Yeah, they're actually located on top of our fifth floor roof, which is the highest point at Fenway Park. It's actually right above our press box. And they are used to heat the hot water on the upper three levels, which service the suite level, two of our clubs, and the media level.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Well, we want to talk about, you know, what your fans are saying and how the Boston community is embracing your efforts and being a leader in that, because ballparks traditionally have not been identified, by me at least, as one of those thought leaders in sustainability efforts. It's usually, you know, restaurants. It starts with all kinds of businesses. But to have a ballpark go this far is just awesome. So Kathleen Harrington with us, calling in from Boston, Massachusetts. She's the Red Sox ballpark development coordinator. And Fenway is the oldest and one of the most sustainable ballparks in the country. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
More on that when we come back. We'll take a quick break. Stay tuned. And
where it began, I can't begin to know it.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites, available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com.
Over 25 years ago, my husband and I started a business around our passion for ginger. We called it The Ginger People. Today, you can find our products at natural food stores nationwide. We love ginger. It's what we do. And the more we learned about the amazing properties of ginger, the more we realized that everyone benefits from eating ginger every day. My name is Abby Leeson, and I am with The Ginger People. To learn more about our products, the goodness of ginger, and how it can improve your health, visit gingerpeople.com. That's gingerpeople.com.
And we're back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today we're talking about green in unusual places. With us on the phone from Boston, Massachusetts, is Kathleen Harrington Red Sox ballpark development coordinator, about all the amazing initiatives that are going on at Fenway. And we'll come back to that interview in a second. But first, as always, here's Mark Mulcahy with What's in Season.
So for all of you who've been sitting there wondering, I hope you were able to listen to the interview if you weren't too enthralled with that question that I set you up with. What's the vegetable that's grown in every continent except for Antarctica? Are you ready? It's corn. Unbelievable. I wouldn't have thought corn would be grown in certain places. Alaska, corn. But yes, because, you know, the land of the midnight sun, they can grow corn there. Unbelievable. So corn. So here's the other question for you. Is it a grain? Is it a vegetable? What is it? What is corn? Well, it's actually a grass. Another interesting thing. Corn is a grass. But when we look at the way it grows, the corn is actually part of the flower. Right? The corn. So you're eating the flour when you eat corn, which is pretty amazing, which is also the seed. So that's great. And if you really have a lot of time on your hands, the next time you buy corn, as a matter of fact, I'm going to go home and do this, is if you look at the kernels and you have time to count kernels, the number of kernels, the kernel rows on a cob will always end in an even number. So when you go home, next time you're shucking your corn or something like that, count and see if that actually works for you. And another interesting thing is that each strand of silk that you see coming off the top of your corn cob is attached to a kernel. So if you find a missing kernel, that means there was no silk got pollinated to hit that kernel, and that's why there isn't one. So corn is everywhere. No matter where you live in the country, it's there. It's abundant. There's white. There's bicolor. There's yellow. Bicolor happens to be my favorite. It's also called eggs and butter. It's got that kind of sweet starchiness. It's really great. But when you're looking for it, you want to make sure that the husks are really bright and green and moist. If it looks dried out, that means that corn's probably been around a while, and that's going to make a difference in the flavor. The silk should also be moist and stiff and dark. You don't want floppy silk. So if you're at the store, make sure you've got stiff and moist silk. So choosing, how many times have you ever gone to the store and you're looking at the bin and you see people standing around and they're peeling all this corn back, right? Pull all the shuck, you know, just to see if it's a good ear. Well, there's another way you can do it. You can actually show some people that you actually are a little bit smarter than them. You don't have to shuck all your corn right there at the store. What you can do is you rub your thumb or fingers up the length of the cob. And so you can actually feel the plump, firm individual kernels underneath the husk. And in doing that, you will feel if there's a missing place or if the kernels are too small, because your thumb is that sensitive or your fingers are that sensitive. So rub your thumb or fingers up the length of the cob with the husk on, and you will feel what's underneath. And I guarantee you, about 90% of the time, you'll be able to tell if you've got a good ear of corn. When you store it, you should refrigerate it as soon as possible, because even though there's super sweet varieties out there, it still does lose a little bit of its starch to sugar. And so you probably want to use your fresh corn within 2 or 3 days. If you're one of those people who boil their corn, here's a little tip for you. Do not add salt to the water, because if you add salt to the water of the corn you're boiling, it will toughen the kernels. So the next time you have tough kernels coming out of the pot, you either cooked it too long or you added salt to the water. Something to remind yourself of. My favorite way to eat corn is not cooked at all. I love it raw. Anytime. The sweetness that comes out of there, add it to a salad, add it to a burrito, add it to your morning cereal if you want. But you just got to cut it off the cob. You just take the cob, you hold it up, and then you just run your knife down the length of the cob, and it comes off right into a bowl. And if you use the back end of your knife and press against it, then it'll actually take the milk out of there, so you get a little bit more of that sweetness out of the corn. Lastly, should you buy organic corn? The answer is yes. And one of the reasons is because conventional corn is a heavy synthetic nitrogen feeder, and nitrogen runoff is a huge cause of pollution in waterways, creeks and waterways. And lastly, most of the corn grown in the U.S., especially in the Midwest, is sprayed with an herbicide called atrazine, and that's been shown to have devastating effects on aquatic life. So choose organic, choose fresh, use your thumb, and enjoy your corn.
And that was Mark Mukahi with What's in Season. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
I left your comment on, you don't want floppy silk. And I was sitting here wondering, is there any sentence that would start with, you don't want floppy, that where you would say, actually, you do want floppy. No. So, yeah, no, you don't want, definitely you don't want floppy silk. I hate floppy silk. Mark Mukahi with What's in Season. Thank you, Mark. We're talking about green and unusual places. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mukahi.
Yes, and we have Fenway Ballpark on the line with us still. Kathleen Harrington, Sweet Caroline Kathleen Harrington. Kathleen, you're the Red Sox Ballpark Development Coordinator, and I know that Sweet Caroline is your kind of, you know, Boston national anthem for the ballpark. How did that come about, on a side note?
You know, I'm not exactly sure. I know they play it in the middle of the eighth inning every day or every game, and fans love it. I'm not sure how it started, but
yeah, no, every stadium, every team has kind of their anthem in a way, their songs or song that is associated with them. Mark, would you know why?
Well, actually, during their World Series run, one of the players was actually listening to that when they won a major game, and from that point on they started playing it after that in the clubhouse and then in the stadium
that.
And so and they haven't stopped it.
That's fantastic. How about that? We're talking about green and unusual places. We heard that Germany will abandon all nuclear power by 2022. The National Park Service is offering land stewardship training. There are Washington cafeterias in Washington, D.C. Installed based on a request of congressional staff. And now we have ballparks fully going into the organic and sustainable world, including and leading the charge with Fenway, Boston.
Yeah, so can you tell us about some of the food that you're selling there? I understand that you are carrying some organic and local food in some of your areas.
Whenever Aramark, who is responsible for all of our concessions and they cook in all of our clubs, whenever possible, they will buy locally grown products and organic produce.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And do your fans know about that they're buying those products? Is there any way that you're announcing that to your fans?
And all your initiatives, really, you were saying, from recycling to composting, the lawn clippings, your lawn management, everything you do, how do you communicate that to your fans and what's their reaction?
There's a page on RedSox.com that focuses on all of our greening initiatives. We also play a video on our main scoreboard before every game, kind of highlighting some of the things we've done here. And also the green team, the group of volunteers who comb the seeding bowl collecting recyclables, wear these neon green shirts with our Red Sox greening logo and Poland Springs logo on there. So they're definitely visible, which helps to generate some interest in the program.
Mm-hmm. And then what's the reaction of the fans? Do you feel they do care? Is it acknowledged? Is it recognized?
Yeah, I definitely think they care. We get all sorts of emails and letters complimenting us on what we have done. People are constantly coming up with new ideas of things we could do here. Also, I monitor the green team emails that come in, and there's all sorts of people who, you know, would see these people volunteering in game, and they want to know how they become part of it, or they heard about the program through their school, and they want to become involved in it as well. So there's definitely positive interest in the greening program.
And it puts a whole new spin on recycling the Cubs, right?
Oh, you mean the Yankees?
So, Kathleen, what are those, some of the new ideas? We're almost out of time, but it's so fantastic to see that in all walks of life, in any business at this point throughout the country, really from coast to coast, you see sustainability efforts being carried out, being embraced, being communicated, and with that stimulating really the conversation further, right, when fans leave. They will know about this. They will, hear about it in other circumstances. They will see at a restaurant an organic meal. And so it kind of becomes, it becomes a movement throughout society. What are some of those ideas that are suggested or that you are working on right now?
Well, we're hoping to develop a long-term energy efficiency plan. We're also hoping to expand our composting. I would love to do composting in the office one day or do it more throughout the concourse so fans can actually actively compost. It is challenging for us at Fenway because in addition to being the oldest ballpark, we're also the smallest ballpark. So we're very limited in terms of storage space to store different barrels used for composting and other miscellaneous things. We're also located in the heart of Boston. We don't have a whole lot of surrounding area around the ballpark. We don't have an official parking lot or anything like that that we could use for storage space. So we do face challenges when it comes to storage. We also face some challenges when it comes to more noticeable changes, such as adding wind turbines. We have to go through historic approval processes on a city, state, and federal level, so we do face challenges that kind of limit us a little bit in terms of that, just due to Fenway's age and kind of historic status.
Sure. But that's fantastic. Keep it up. Keep up the great, great work you're doing. Keep communicating it. I always find that part of what you do, really bringing it out, letting people know about it, letting them appreciate it, or at least really know about it so that they hear and see it, that it can be done in other ballparks, I'm sure, too. Are you being contacted by other ballparks? Have ballparks studied what you're doing and how you're doing it?
Well, actually, Major League Baseball is really great at facilitating some conversations with other teams. They have industry meetings where greening is a focus in one of the workshops. They also have conference calls with members of different teams. Who you kind of share ideas of, you know, what's worked for you, what hasn't worked for you, how to make different things work. So MLB is really very helpful in facilitating all of those conversations.
Major League Baseball, you go.
Major League Baseball.
That's fantastic. And if you are a baseball fan and you're listening to the show, next time just check in with your stadium and see what they do and suggest some ideas that, you know, have been implemented in other stadiums as well, including and first and foremost Fenway. And Mark, you're looking at games all the time. Do you see this initiative taking root in other stadiums?
In Minnesota at the Twins ballpark where I was about a month ago, they are collecting all their rainwater, you know, to use to rewater the field and stuff like that. San Francisco Giants are, you know, they've got several initiatives.
There's a produce level on the produce stand on the club level.
The Giants have a produce stand up on the to feed, you know, people fresher food, and the A's have some organic food at their stadium too.
That's Oakland.
That's Oakland A's, yes. So all around the country, actually, we chose Fenway, but all around the country, stadiums are doing lots to, you know, be more green and be more sustainable.
Fantastic. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us was Kathleen Harrington. Kathleen, keep it up. Great to have you today. The development coordinator of the Red Sox ballpark in Boston, Massachusetts. Pleasure
Thanks
to have you on the
much.
Show. Thank you. We have another fantastic guest coming up as along the lines of airplanes and airlines using vegetable oil to run their engines, to run their planes. Even airports are becoming more green, sustainable, and offering organic food. But before we start that interview with our special guest today, here is natural chef Sita Bryan with your
holistic bite.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the introduction. We are talking about corn today, and I grew up in the Midwest, so nothing says summer to me like fresh, sweet corn. I remember shucking corn on summer evenings for my grandmother, and I always saved one ear of raw corn. Like Mark was saying earlier, it's so good raw, and I would eat it on the porch while she was making dinner.
Sweet.
So, although corn gets a bad reputation for being high in sugar, high in starch, and even just highly processed, the corn you'll find at your local market is a vegetable, people. Yes, that's right, listeners. The elusive corn vegetable, as opposed to the corn pop or the corn chip. And like all vegetables, it is great nutrition-wise and can offer you a lot of vitamins. And corn in particular is high in vitamin A. It also has lutein in it, which is a type of carotenoid that protects against cell damage, particularly in the eyes. So corn is really hitting its peak season right now, and last weekend I had the most amazing fresh corn dishes at my favorite restaurant, Poggio. They're known for this incredible corn mousse and risotto, and also they serve this amazing and really simple corn side dish that has chilies and leeks in it. So my recipe for all of you this weekend is a corn and leek sauté with roasted poblano peppers. I also grew up with a lot of spicy food as a child, so the addition of roasted poblano pepper in this dish is a really welcome surprise. The corn is just barely cooked, so it retains its sweetness and its crunch, and it's rich with tender sweet leeks and a hint of basil. My husband and I found 100 different ways to enjoy it over the weekend. We folded it in corn tortillas with mashed avocado. We spread it on soft bread with fresh ricotta cheese, and we stirred it into polenta. So this is a really versatile dish, and it just takes a few minutes to put together. I recommend making a lot of it and having it in your refrigerator so you can use it in a variety of ways throughout the week. Maybe you'll throw it in an omelet for breakfast in the morning. So let your creativity in the kitchen guide you as well as your cravings. Lastly, if you're looking for something to do with all of those corn cobs, what I do is I throw the cobs into my slow cooker, which is where I make beans for the week, and it adds a really nice authentic sweet flavor to the beans while they're cooking. So don't just throw those in the compost. You can get a little bit more use out of them before you throw them in the compost bin. So check us out on anorganicconversation.com or visit us on Facebook, An Organic Conversation, to pick up that recipe for corn and leek sauté with roasted poblano pepper. Mm. I'm Chef Sita. That's your Holistic Bite.
Thank you, Sita. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Wow, the versatility, beautiful. I'll definitely check that out. And we got lots of comments on your recipes from last week, so thank you.
My pleasure.
Coming up now, as we are discussing green in unusual places, is Matthew Gelke, the co-owner of the Plant Cafe, which just opened up on Terminal 2 at the San Francisco International Airport, offering all organic options. But before we go into that interview, we'll take a quick break. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Hi, my name is Abby Leeson, and I am the co-founder of The Ginger People. You can find our products in natural food stores near you. From delicious ginger drinks, sauces, spreads, ginger chews, baked goods, to skincare products. We love ginger. It's what we do. Add the benefits of ginger to your life, and you get that little kick, too. I am Abby Leeson, and I'm with The Ginger People. For inspiration around ginger, go to gingerpeople.com. That's gingerpeople.com.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about green in unusual places. We heard about a bunch of initiatives throughout the country, and on the phone with us was Kathleen Harrington, the Red Sox ballpark development coordinator, talking about Fenway being the oldest, smallest, and perhaps greenest ballpark of all in the country.
Yeah.
Fantastic work. Spanning all the way from recycling of garbage and to the lawn management, to solar panels, to organic food options, local food options at the ballpark. Fantastic. We found another very unusual place to eat organic food, which is the airport. How often is it that we come late for a flight, we check in, and there's nothing really to eat? And nowadays with security, we can't even bring our yummy juice or food through security too often. Is that an obstacle? But there's now a solution if you fly in and out of SFO. With us now on the phone is Matthew Gelke, the co-owner of the Plant Cafe Organic, calling in from San Francisco, California. And they just opened up an all-organic restaurant cafe at San Francisco International Airport, New Terminal 2. Welcome to the show, Matthew.
Thanks, Helga.
Great to have you.
So, Matthew, Mark here, I've been to your restaurants, and you have three restaurants in San Francisco, but before we get into the whole airport concept, why don't you tell us about the Plant Cafe concept and your motivation to offer this menu?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting story. I came from a philosophy, design, technology background, and I went down to a food sort of health retreat in Florida about 6 or 7 years ago. It was a raw food retreat that still exists called Hippocrates Health Institute. And the reason I went down was my sister's brother-in-law was diagnosed with cancer at a fairly young age in his early 40s. And so our whole family and his whole family went to go down to this raw food retreat to see what we could do to improve our health, you know, everyone as a family, but him as well. And we went down there, and what I found was pretty amazing to me. I had always eaten fairly healthy foods, juices, that kind of thing, but sort of what I saw down there after having spent 3 weeks eating raw organic foods, it really impressed me. My parents both had sort of minor medical issues that had persisted for 20, 30 years. They literally went away, you know, skin condition, migraines, things like that. And what they taught us down there at Hippocrates was a lot of people are eating foods that they think are healthy for them, but they really aren't. And so as just by simply taking those foods out of your diet and replacing them with foods that most people know are healthy, you know, leafy green vegetables, organic fare, that kind of thing, your body can not only heal itself but get much, much healthier and overcome all kinds of obstacles. So after that, I was still working in the technology sector, and I thought, what next? And what I found when I moved back to San Francisco after that was it's very difficult to eat this way. And there are a lot of really great vegetarian restaurants that cater to organic local produce.
If you don't cook at home, you mean if you go out, right? It's really hard to find
restaurants
exactly. That committed. Yes.
Yeah, and I mean, eating this way, if you cook at home, it's definitely very doable. But if you go out, it's not that easy to find. So
yes.
We found that either it was a very sort of high-end concepts that would offer exclusively organic food or vegetarian sort of concepts, and there wasn't something for the common person where you could either be vegetarian or eat some meat and eat regular dishes and have sort of easy access to this kind of thing. And as a result, myself and one of the board members from the software company I was working with decided to embark on this project and simply provide access to clean, healthy food. And the first plant, actually back then called lettuce, was born in at the end of 2005.
And that was in San Francisco. And what did you offer and how has that changed? What are you offering now? It's not necessarily raw only. What's the menu about?
No, so one of the things we really wanted to offer right from the go was raw, fresh juices. And we were surprised in the marina those really took off. We weren't so sure, myself, and I speak we, that's myself, my business partner, Mark Lewis, and then our executive chef, Sasha Weiss. We were really surprised when people really went for kale and beet and strawberry juice over, you know, some of the more processed juices that people can get at juice shops out there. So that was a really important aspect because juicing, it allows you to get a lot of nutrients quickly and easily. But we also wanted to offer chicken and seafood. The seafood we offer is sustainable only. So anything that you eat and that comes from the sea is something that is not considered endangered. It's not farmed, so it's not potentially harming the ecosystem and the oceans. And then along with the poultry we serve, the duck and the chicken, it's not only free range, but it's organic. So we want to provide sort of access for people to easily contribute to healthy, happy animals. We never did serve red meat, and we still don't, even though there are some very good red meat out there that's well-raised, sustainably raised, organically raised. But it's a huge contributing factor to global warming. And a cause of, you know, overconsumption of meat is also a factor in people's health. So we decided not to offer that.
Yes. We're talking with Matthew Gelke, the co-owner of the Plant Cafe Organic, today on Green in Unusual Places here on an Organic Conversation. And so, Matthew, now this year, this whole concept, the idea as it has evolved, started in 2005 in San Francisco. And now this year, in 2011, just a few weeks ago, a couple months ago, you actually took the leap and opened a Plant Cafe Organic branch or, a store, like a cafeteria, a twig. I love that. A twig, an organic
the
twig.
At the, all over the place.
At the San Francisco International Airport Terminal 2, the brand new, already kind of green, sustainably built with green materials, built Terminal 2. What do you offer there, and why the jump to offer your food in an airport?
Well, the idea behind this is, it was never to just open a restaurant where people could get organic food. It was to open as many as we could, again, to provide access for people to just affordably and simply eat organic, clean, local food. And to be honest with you, opening three restaurants in San Francisco has been pretty tough. It's a tough market to be a restaurant owner.
And make money, yeah.
And so, we certainly can't do a lot more than that on our own. And the franchise notion was in the forefront of our minds when we started all this, so that we could have very tight control over what ingredients are offered in the sense that they're all 100% organic and local.
Which is really that's really your message, right? If it's not available organic, you don't offer it.
Exactly. I mean, it's very easy.
It's very simple.
It's a slippery slope to say, well, this is natural, but it's hard to understand what the regulatory systems out there, the FDA and such, consider to be natural, what they consider to be healthy for you. So we kind of are that filter, and we don't compromise at all. And I think that's maybe what differentiates us from most places, because we, as you said, we simply don't offer it unless it's 100% organic.
And you see, organic or local whenever possible, which is, and most often a true intention of that restaurant or that establishment to feature what's in season, when they can get it, and distribution is a challenge. And we want to talk with you about that, where you buy from. But you really have that policy. If it's not available as an organic option, you simply wouldn't put it on the menu.
Right. And in fact, that's part of the reason we started this, because there were so many menus out there, especially in San Francisco and California, where they say wherever possible. But then you don't really know which ingredients are and which ingredients aren't. It's like genetically modified. In North America, the consumer is not told. So, if you go to Europe, you're at least sort of notified whether it is or it isn't. So it's very difficult to find out and to know that you're eating that way when you're eating out. Exactly. We just don't compromise on that. We make sure that if there's no tomatoes seasonably and locally available that are organic, they come out of our sandwiches. And for a lot of restaurants, that's hard to do. And it often tends to be more expensive.
Sure.
Well, that's the great thing to hear about, is you only want to offer quality products to your clientele. So Terminal 2 in SFO, mm-hmm. Are you using the same menu that you do at your other cafes, and are you working with local farmers to bring product there to the airport?
Absolutely. So Our menu at the airport is slightly reduced in size. It's an interesting flow of traffic at the airport. There's a lot of morning traffic, so their breakfasts are very busy, but it's not a typical lunch business. It really depends on the flight traffic. And so they offer a slightly reduced menu. We have juices there, probably about half the number, sort of our most popular juices. We have our plant burger, which is a Canadian recipe, which was then tweaked by our executive chef to win one of the best sort of vegetarian burger in San Francisco. It's absolutely delicious. It's all made from ingredients the day before, beets, cashews, bulgur wheat, mushrooms, that kind of thing. So it's not a very typical vegetarian burger. We also offer some sandwiches and salads and that kind of thing. But it's a slightly reduced menu from our general menu.
And so it's only been 2 months, but what's the response? Are people embracing the concept? I mean, for me, of course, I work and live in the organic movement. For me, this is a godsend idea of having healthy food at the airport, because when I, you know, have to travel to Germany to visit my family, I am known to bring 5 Tupperware containers onto the plane with me, so I can sustain myself over 12 or 14 hour flights. This is an amazing concept for me, where I know even if I don't get the breakfast because I didn't want to get up even earlier, I can get there, I can check in, I can get my organic meal after security, and then board the plane with that. What's the feedback that you've received over the last 2 months?
You know, so far it's pretty good. We get a lot of really excited people. In San Francisco, being that we've sort of grown from 1 to 3 restaurants, people know us, or some people know us. In the airport, we get a mixture of people that know us and are really excited to see us, and other people that don't know really what we are. They see the name Plant Cafe Organic, and they wander up, and then they find out what we're about and are quite excited about eating that way. Because it's only been 2 months, as a restaurant operator, I would, it usually takes us a couple of months to get all the kinks ironed out.
Sure.
So that's still going on, but at the same time, people can still get a delicious, organic, healthy meal. So we're still playing with the offerings there. But yeah, for the most part, it's been a really a positive experience for the customers, and we've heard some good things back from our customers in San Francisco.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about green and unusual places. We looked at Fenway Ballpark of the Boston Red Sox baseball, Major League Baseball, earlier, and now on the phone, Matthew Gilke, the co-owner of the Plant Cafe Organic, which just opened up among 3 other restaurants branches in San Francisco, has now a little tweak, and an all-organic cafe at Terminal 2 at San Francisco International Airport. So anyone flying in or out can refuel there with all-organic options, from juices to kind of a cafeteria menu. Matthew, good luck with that endeavor.
Thank you.
May it spread to every airport across the country. And actually, there are many airports who have some organic options. So it's definitely coming into the awareness and consciousness of travelers everywhere. But with your Terminal 2 now, it's an all-organic cafe. And if it's not available organic or local, you won't put it on. So thank you for that. Thank you for the effort. And really, good luck with that endeavor.
Thank you. And I'd just like to say to listeners, especially if you live in San Francisco, please come and visit one of our 3 branches. One is on the Embarcadero, one's in the downtown financial area, and one is in the Marina.
And what's the website, Matthew, if people want to check you out before?
The website is www.theplantcafe.com.
Theplantcafe.com.
It will be updated in about 4 weeks to look completely different, because it's a 5-year-old website. But
still beautiful today. Thank you so much. Thanks, Matthew, for joining us today.
Good.
Pleasure to have you. Wow, Mark.
Well, I'm going to the airport this week. I can't wait to
I'm going now. yeah, fantastic. All of it. From Fenway Park to San Francisco Airport, from DC to the Giants to it's really inspiring to see that change is afoot.
It's it's great. Even the vending machine in Washington D.C. right?
Yes,
offering organic food
requested by congressional staff, the U.S. Park Service. It's really from the political leadership to the grassroots efforts. It's all kind of melting together now. There's no company or part of business that I know of that can turn its back on sustainability efforts or is turning its back on sustainability efforts. And all that kind of, you know, happened within the last, 8 to 10 years max. I mean, even though many of the initiatives started way earlier, but it feels like now we reached that kind of critical mass point where it's everywhere. Fantastic.
We really do live in a world of possibility, don't we?
Yes. And that brings us right to the possibility of the mailbag.
I love the mailbag.
This is the moment when we give voice to our listeners. Thank you for contacting us. You can either visit us on Facebook, an Organic Conversation Facebook, or you can send us comments to share@anorganicconversation.com. And we had a bunch of comments on a new grocery store concept in Austin, Texas. It will be the first grocery store that will have no packaging.
Wow.
I don't know what that will look like. Reminds me of very early childhood Germany, where you would go to the butcher and where you would go to the cheesemonger, and they would wrap it in paper, kind of waxed paper, and that's how you would take it home. And literally your garbage can was, you know, 2 gallons for the week. I mean, there was just no, there was really very little to no waste. So this will be the first no packaging grocery store in Austin, Texas, opening up soon.
We'll have to have them on the air.
We will. Mark, what did you get?
Well, I also heard from Pauline in Fayetteville, Arkansas. So a lot of our mail's coming from the southern states today. And she was just saying how much she enjoyed. She's been listening to our podcast, and she said she really enjoyed our barbecue show we did about a year ago, and that she really appreciated the grilled radicchio recipe. So if you haven't listened to that show, you might want to check it out, because we had some great grilling tips on there. And,
In general, with Chef Sita on Facebook now and Organic Conversation, lots of great recipes. And then we had a comment asking for a show on food labels, just as Matthew just said, you know, natural versus organic versus grass-fed, pasture-based, all that. We will actually create a show around that coming up soon here on An Organic Conversation.
And so that was the mail. That was the mailbag this week. But so we know, we just heard what's on our listeners' mind. But what I'd really like to know, Helga, is what is on your mind today?
Yes, here's Helga's organic moment. Well, I've been pondering these days the question of what actually creates change. How do we get to the tipping point? What's the path of changing consciousness or awareness? It's so interesting to me in the organic food movement, as an example, as it is true in any other movement, political, environmental, or social, there are grassroots efforts. There are countless nonprofits working. There are incredible books and articles that drive the conversation further. There are thought leaders. There are stores and restaurants, political leadership. All of these people and places and actions that have their part. But above all, as the basis for any and all actions, there seems to be a need for change, an intellectual, physical, and spiritual recognition that what has been is no longer working. And this recognition is carried by society at large, by every single individual in one way or another. We often hear the term critical mass, which suggests that there's a specific but yet kind of undefinable number of people actively engaging in this conversation in one way or another. But of course, that's not us. That's the other people doing their part. We often don't take credit for our leadership. We often don't feel a sense of ownership or contribution in this transformational work. Most of us would not consider ourselves change agents, and yet we are, all of us. This is our collective society. Every single conversation, every inquiry about where our food comes from or why things are done the way they are, every single conversation at the dinner table about food and society and animal welfare and obesity creates the recognition that we need to and can change the current system. The soft water shapes the stone over months and years, and every drop counts. So whatever you do, say, or think, you are part of the collective body, and it matters. Take credit for it. So this is for you then, for all of you out there, for all of us. thank you for being a change agent. And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Gina Rustani.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other show, go to iTunes or anorganicconversation.com. We're your hosts, Helge Helberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.